Chapter 9. Anything, only looking very sick, when I made a point of it going in black on white. How could I tell what was wrong about you? There's generally something wrong somewhere. And, lo and behold, when you come on board it turns out that you've been in the habit of drinking nothing but water for years and years. His dogmatic reproachful whine stopped. He brooded profoundly, after the manner of crafty and unintelligent men. It seemed inconceivable that Captain Wally should not laugh at the expression of disgust that overspread the heavy, yellow countenance. But Captain Wally never raised his eyes sitting in his armchair, outraged, dignified, and motionless. Much good it was to me, Massey remonstrated monotonously, to insert a clause for dismissal for intemperance against a man who drinks nothing but water. And you looked so upset too, when I read my draft in the lawyer's office that morning, Captain Wally, you looked so crestfallen, that I made sure I had gone home on your weak spot. A shipowner can't be too careful as to the sort of skipper he gets. You must have been laughing at me in your sleeve all the blessed time. Eh? What are you going to say? Captain Wally had only shuffled his feet slightly. A dull animosity became apparent in Massey's sideways stare. But recollect that there are other grounds of dismissal. There's habitual carelessness, amounting to incompetence. There's gross and persistent neglect of duty. I am not quite as big a fool as you try to make me out to be. You have been careless of late, leaving everything to that Serang. Why? I've seen you let Ting, that old fool of a Malay, take bearings for you, as if you were too big to attend to your work yourself. And what do you call that silly touch, and go manner in which you took the ship over the bar just now? You expect me to put up with that? Leaning on his elbow against the ladder abaft the bridge, Stern, the mate, tried to hear, blinking the while from the distance at the second engineer, who had come up for a moment, and stood in the engine room companion. Wiping his hands on a bunch of cotton waste, he looked about with indifference to the right and left at the river bank slipping astern of the Cephala steadily. Massey turned full at the chair. The character of his whine became again threatening. Take care. I may yet dismiss you and freeze to your money for a year. I may. But before the silent, rigid immobility of the man whose money had come in the nick of time, to save him from utter ruin, his voice died out in his throat. Not that I want you to go, he resumed after a silence, and in an absurdly insinuating tone. Want nothing better than to be friends and renew the agreement, if you will consent to find another couple of hundred to help with the new boilers, Captain Wally. I've told you before. She must have new boilers. You know it as well as I do. Have you thought this over? He waited. The slender stem of the pipe with its bulky lump of a bowl at the end hung down from his thick lips. It had gone out. Suddenly he took it from between his teeth and wrung his hands slightly. Don't you believe me? He thrust the pipe bowl into the pocket of his shiny black jacket. It's like dealing with the devil, he said. Why don't you speak? At first you were so high and mighty with me, I hardly dared to creep about my own deck. Now I can't get a word from you. You don't seem to see me at all. What does it mean? Upon my soul, you terrify me with this deaf and dumb trick. What's going on in that head of yours? What are you plotting against me there so hard that you can't say a word? You will never make me believe that you don't know where to lay your hands on a couple of hundred. You have made me curse the day I was born. Mr. Massey, said Captain Wally suddenly, without stirring. The engineer started violently. If that is so, I can only beg you to forgive me. Starboard, muttered the Serang to the helmsman, and the Cephala began to swing round the bend into the second reach. Oh! Massey shuddered. Who make my blood run cold? What made you come here? What made you come aboard that evening all of a sudden, with your high talk and your money tempting me? I always wondered what was your motive? You fastened yourself on me to have easy times, and grow fat on my lifeblood, I tell you. Was that it? I believe you are the greatest miser in the world, or else why? Dot, no. I am only poor, interrupted Captain Wally, stonily. Steady, murmured the Serang. Massey turned away with his chin on his shoulder. I don't believe it, he said in his dogmatic tone. Captain Wally made no movement. Here you sit like a gorged vulture, exactly like a vulture. He embraced the middle of the reach, and both the banks in one blank unseeing circular glance, and left the bridge slowly. X, on turning to descend, Massey perceived the head of Stern the mate loitering, with his sly confident smile, his red mustaches and blinking eyes, at the foot of the ladder. Stern had been a junior in one of the larger shipping concerns, before joining the Cephala. He had thrown up his berth, he said, on general principles. The promotion in the employ was very slow, he complained, and he thought it was time for him to try and get on a bit in the world. It seemed as though nobody would ever die, or leave the firm. They all stuck fast in their berths till they got mildewed. He was tired of waiting, and he feared that, when a vacancy did occur, the best servants were by no means sure of being treated fairly. Besides, the captain he had to serve under Captain Provost was an unaccountable sort of man, and, he fancied, had taken a dislike to him for some reason or other. For doing rather more than his bare duty, as likely as not. When he had done anything wrong, he could take a talking to, like a man. But he expected to be treated like a man too, and not to be addressed invariably, as though he were a dog. He had asked Captain Provost plump and plain to tell him where he was at fault, and Captain Provost, in a most scornful way, had told him that he was a perfect officer, and that if he disliked the way he was being spoken to, there was the gangway he could take himself off ashore at once. But everybody knew what sort of man Captain Provost was. It was no use appealing to the office. Captain Provost had too much influence in the employ. All the same, they had to give him a good character. He made bold to say there was nothing in the world against him, and, as he had happened to hear, that the mate of the Cephala had been taken to the hospital that morning with a sunstroke, he thought there would be no harm in seeing whether he would not do. He had come to Captain Wally freshly shaved, red-faced, thin-flanked, throwing out his lean chest, and had recited his little tale with an open and manly assurance. Now and then his eyelids quivered slightly, his hand would steal up to the end of the flaming mustache, his eyebrows were straight, furry, of a chestnut color, and the directness of his frank gaze seemed to tremble on the verge of impudence. Captain Wally had engaged him temporarily. Then, the other man having been ordered home by the doctors, he had remained for the next trip, and then the next. He had now attained permanency, and the performance of his duties was marked by an air of serious, single-minded application. Directly he was spoken to, he began to smile attentively, with a great deference expressed in his whole attitude. But there was in the rapid winking which went on all the time something quizzical, as though he had possessed the secret of some universal joke cheating all creation and impenetrable to other mortals. Grave and smiling he watched Massey come down step by step. When the chief engineer had reached the deck he swung about, and they found themselves face to face. Matched as to height and utterly dissimilar, they confronted each other, as if there had been something between them, something else than the bright strip of sunlight that, falling through the wide lacing of two awnings, cut crosswise the narrow planking of the deck, and separated their feet as it were a stream, something profound and subtle and incalculable, like an unexpressed understanding, a secret mistrust, or some sort of fear. At last Stern, blinking his deep-set eyes and sticking forward his scraped, clean-cut chin, as crimson as the rest of his face, murmured, "You've seen?" He grazed. "You've seen?" Massey, contemptuous, and without raising his yellow, fleshy countenance, replied in the same pitch, "Maybe. But if it had been you, we would have been stuck fast in the mud." "Pardon me, Mr. Massey. I beg to deny it. Of course a shipowner may say what he jolly well pleases on his own deck, That's all right, but I beg to. Dot, get out of my way. The other had a slight start, the impulse of suppressed indignation perhaps, but held his ground. Massey's downward glance wandered right and left, as though the deck all round stern had been bestrewn with eggs, that must not be broken, and he had looked irritably for places where he could set his feet in flight. In the end he too did not move, though there was plenty of room to pass on. I heard you say up there, went on the mate, and a very just remark it was too that there's always something wrong. Dot, dot, eavesdropping is what's wrong with you, Mr. Stern. Now, if you would only listen to me for a moment, Mr. Massey, sir, I could. Dot, you are a sneak, interrupted Massey in a great hurry, and even managed to get so far as to repeat, a common sneak, before the mate had broken in argumentatively. Now, sir, what is it you want? You want? Dot, I want, stammered Massey, infuriated and astonished. Want? How do you know that I want anything? How dare you, dot dot, what do you mean? Dot dot dot, what are you after, you dot dot, promotion? Stern silenced him with a sort of candid bravado. The engineer's round soft cheeks quivered still, but he said quietly enough, you are only worrying my head off, and Stern met him with a confident little smile. A chap in business I know well up in the world he is now, used to tell me that this was the proper way. Always push on to the front, apostrophe he would say. Keep yourself well before your boss. Interfere whenever you get a chance. Show him what you know. Worry him into seeing you. Apostrophe, that was his advice. Now I know no other boss than you here. You are the owner, and no one else counts for that much in my eyes. See, Mr. Massey? I want to get on. I make no secret of it, that I am one of the sort that means to get on. These are the men to make use of, sir. You haven't arrived at the top of the tree, sir, without finding that out, I dare say. Worry your boss in order to get on, mumbled Massey, as if awestruck by the irreverent originality of the idea. Shouldn't wonder if this was just what the Blue Anchor people kicked you out of the employ for. Is that what you call getting on? You shall get on in the same way here, if you aren't careful, I can promise you. At this Stern hung his head, thoughtful, perplexed, winking hard at the deck. All his attempts to enter into confidential relations with his owner had led of late to nothing better than these dark threats of dismissal, and a threat of dismissal would check him at once into a hesitating silence, as though he were not sure that the proper time for defying it had come. On this occasion he seemed to have lost his tongue for a moment, and Massey, getting in motion, heavily passed him by with an abortive attempt at shouldering. Stern defeated it by stepping aside. He turned then swiftly, opening his mouth very wide, as if to shout something after the engineer, but seemed to think better of it. Always as he was ready to confess on the lookout for an opening to get on, it had become an instinct with him to watch the conduct of his immediate superiors for something that one could lay hold of. It was his belief that no skipper in the world would keep his calm man for a day, if only the owners could be made to know. This romantic and naive theory had led him into trouble more than once, but he remained incorrigibly. And his character was so instinctively disloyal that whenever he joined a ship the intention of ousting his Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.